Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach. This is our first live show of 2017, so welcome you back to live shows. We did a great one recently with Father Richard Rohr. I know that got a lot of traction, so if you haven't heard that one, check that out. That was one of our more memorable recent shows. But we got a memorable show coming up today because I have well-known author and speaker Greg Lavoie with me. He's famous for his best-selling book, Callings, Finding and Following an Authentic Life, which fits very well with Unity. And, of course, Greg has been a longtime friend of Unity. He's also written a powerful book called Vital Signs, Discovering and Sustaining Your Passion for Life. So all about authenticity, passion, being all that we are created to be, expanding into that larger sense of who we are. Greg, as I said, is a friend of Unity and has provided keynote speeches for Unity in such prestigious agencies and institutions as the Smithsonian, the EPA, Microsoft, and of course he's been a frequent guest on various media outlets, including CNN, NBC, PBS, etc., etc. So it's exciting. It's exciting to have Greg Lavoie with us today to talk about the idea of being called, and what better time of year to get into that. So, you know, we're thinking about our white stone Sundays in Unity, putting on our qualities on that stone. We're thinking about the resolutions we may have made. So wonderful. So it's a great pleasure to welcome Greg Lavoie to today's show. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You know, the Bhagavad Gita says it's better to do the work that is your own dharma, that however humble what you're called to do, however humble, than someone else's work or dharma, however great. And that's a very profound statement, isn't it? I think, and Martin Luther King Jr. sort of followed up on that a little bit by saying, you know, be however humble, whatever you're doing, be the best street sweeper you can be. It's not about us all becoming celebrities. You know, this cult of celebrity, you know, that's when I make millions of dollars and when I'm well known, then that's my true calling. You know, I've got to become exceptional in that regard. But really, that's doing disservice, isn't it, to us and what a true calling is.
Oh, I think so myself. I agree. I ran across a article recently written by a hospice nurse named Bronnie Ware, and it was called "The Five Biggest Regrets of the Dying." And number one was what you had just quoted from Martin Luther King and from the Bhagavad Gita. The biggest regret of the dying was that they lived the life other people thought they should live rather than their own.
Yeah.
And I'm really struck by that. And, you know, this notion of we know we're following our callings when we make a lot of money or gain a lot of fame for it. That's, of course, I think, wrong-headed. And in fact, when people come to me and say, I can't possibly quit a toxic job because I need the paycheck, or I won't pursue a calling unless it's going to pay the bills, I try to gently suggest that they consider taking money off of the table just for the time being and just pursue whatever the passion or the call is and see what unfolds in their life and not immediately burden it with the need to pay the mortgage. And that's really kind of something we added on, I think, late in the game, because the origin of callings is the point was simply to respond affirmatively, was simply to say, yes, it was not to pay the bills with it.
Right, yeah. And I think we put it backwards, don't we, because we're so outer-oriented, we're so conditioned by the world and what the world demands of us that we tend to put that first rather than, as Jesus said, you know, seek first the kingdom, first your passion, your calling, and then all these things that you need will be added to you. And I'm an exemplar of that in my own life, because, you know, all the things that I've succeeded in have been from things that were intangible. You know, when I followed the intangible, they led to sustenance. And so I know this works because I've lived it myself. But it's really hard, isn't it? And maybe you've got some advice for us. You know, when we got tunnel vision, we can't see that there's anything higher than, you know, providing food, taking care of business and all that. We get locked into that world of apparent limitation, right?
Yeah, and it's easy, like you said, very, very easy, tragically easy to do. In fact, I think possibly the primary drama for most people in their own relationships, certainly vocationally speaking, is the struggle between passion and security. And my observation has been that in the tug of war between those two things, security has a tendency to win. And passion and calling has a tendency to get backburnered or sidelined. But I think that if you're not expressing it, then you're suppressing it. Or repressing. Or depressing it. They all mean the same thing, of course, which is to push it down. And I don't believe that you can do that with impunity. I don't believe you can continue to ignore the calls wherever you perceive that they come from, whether they're your own soul or whether they're God, your own potential. I don't think you can ignore them for the long haul sort of and get away with it. Because I guess I say that because the human psyche is kind of like the earth in the sense that it's a closed system. In the sense that there's no away as in running away, you know, there's no out as in throwing the garbage out. Whatever you push down is simply going to come up someplace else in the system, even if it comes out as symptoms or recurring dreams or a kind of weird failure that follows you around that's a result of not following the calls. I ran across a Mexican poet some years ago by the name of Jose Frias, and he said, I tried to drown my sorrows with drink, but the damn things learned how to swim.
Yeah, there we go.
And that's a beautiful, beautiful description of systems theory, I think.
Yeah. I was on an island in the Caribbean with my daughter when she was about, I guess, a teenager, you know, and we were sitting on the beach And my wife turned to me and said, you know, it's so perfect here. Everything's wonderful. And I said, yeah, but watch out, you know, because, you know, your troubles are coming in on the next plane, you know. Because,
yes, right.
You know, it's the same idea, isn't it? They soon find us out, you know.
They do.
We can't escape to a perfect place. There's never a perfect time to start again. I think that's, some of us are waiting for all the circumstances to be right. You know, when I win the lottery, you know, when my ship comes in, proverbially.
Exactly.
And now is the time, right?
Exactly.
As
In
always.
Fact, I think that's one of people's favorite strategies for avoiding calls is waiting for the perfect moment to act, which is always out there somewhere. It's, you know, right amount of time and money and education and, you know, stars are aligned just so. I remember hearing a public speaker named Rosita Perez. She said, for most people, the refrain goes like this. It's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready, three to get ready, three to get ready.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking that was so appropriate.
I'll have to remember that one. That's a good one to use on Sunday. Yeah.
But there's a lot of strategies that people use to avoid calls, and I think it pays to acknowledge what yours are. I mean, what, you know, I don't mean you particularly. I mean what one's strategies of avoidance are. Like, one of my favorite ones was studying them to death. You know, there's always one more angle to consider. There's one more skill to build. There's one more expert I've got to consult. There's another book I've got to read, another workshop I've got to take. You know, there's always one more month or one more year till I'm really ready and my proverbial ducks are all lined up.
Right.
And frankly, I think that happens roughly around the same time the cows come home.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we have a hard time trusting ourselves, don't we, for some reason?
Yeah, we do. We definitely
And we look, to other people to solve all our problems. And I think we have this going on in our country right now in America, you know, the idea of the divisions that we're all feeling, you know. And we hope we got this magic person now for some of us. You know, he's the one that's going to make America great again or whatever.
Right.
And you know, there's no such thing, is there? It's counterintuitive that somebody like, you know, President-elect is being charged with this. One reason or another. You know, with all kinds of interesting psychology there.
Exactly. I think it's pretty easy to want to hand off our power and our decision-making to other people, starting with, you know, parents and then teachers and bosses and therapists and doctors. And,
yes, exactly.
It's very easy to do that, and it's hard, work to take your power back. And your volition back, and your sense of agency in the world. It's hard because it comes with a sense of responsibility for your own life that you, in some cases, would just assume give up to somebody else. And you get to blame them if something goes wrong.
Well, I was going to add that, yeah, because that's the interesting psychology of it, isn't it? As soon as we set somebody up to be our perfect person, our leader, whatever, then we also want to, you know, tear them down in some way.
Exactly.
And I don't know what that's about. It's almost like, you know, we keep ourselves stuck that way. You know, well, I set somebody up, but they're not as good as I thought they were, and, you know, because I can't believe or trust anything, et cetera, et cetera. So we instead of following our calling and our joy, we're going around the spin cycle, aren't we, of it'll never work out. You know, even that person that I thought was so great isn't, so I don't have a chance, kind of thing.
Right. And, you know, part of the hard human work of taking our power back is making our own decisions and abiding by the consequences, you know, and there are consequences. And I don't mean to frighten people when I say that, but, you know, that's part of what's involved in a calling is a sacrifice. There's always sacrifices involved, and that's part of what we take on when we take on those kind of decisions.
Right.
That's a lesson I learned a little bit earlier in life that I cared to, because I come from a family business, and all the men in the family back to the 1880s went into that business. And me and my two brothers were the first generation that refused to do it. All three of us had calls, and we followed them. And two things happened as a result of that. The business was sold out of the family when my father retired, and the other thing that happened is he cut all three of us out of his will.
Yeah, right.
So I learned really early, I was barely in my 20s when that happened, is that there are sacrifices that come from following your own true north.
Yes.
And I think that's important to remember that. I know sometimes I hear people say, this is one of these wonderful manifestational laws, leap and the net will appear. Have you heard that phrase?
Yes.
Leap and the net will appear, or leap and build your wings on the way down.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
I mean, there's something to be said for that, certainly, as you thinketh, but haven't we all either known people or had the experience ourselves of leaping sometimes and going splat? So I hesitate to just say to people, if you follow your calls, the doors will all swing open and the bluebirds of happiness will alight on your shoulders and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, right.
You know, sometimes yes, but sometimes no. I mean, even Joseph Campbell, who's the guy who popularized that phrase that everybody puts on their bumper stickers, follow your bliss,
uh-huh.
He said, if you follow your bliss, you'll have your bliss, but nothing else is guaranteed. And that's sometimes a hard pill to swallow.
Well, it reminds me of, you know, various interviews that the Beatles did, you know, especially the George Harrison talked a lot about this, the idea that, yeah, you know, being a Beatle did bring him amazing blessings, you know, on all kinds of levels, but it also created a straitjacket. You know, they were forced into a certain role, right? So, yeah, although they followed their calling and became this amazing phenomenon, you know, it came at a price, and eventually they had to break out from that. And, you know, John Lennon talked about it, didn't he, breaking it free of what Beatle was. You know, he wanted to be him, and I think that's, you know, we can all admire the Beatles and we love the music, but it's humanizing to think that, oh my goodness, they had wonderful experiences and they brought so many blessings, but they also had a certain amount of suffering, you know, from taking on that role, and of course endlessly being, you know, observed, etc., and criticized often if they didn't do what the public thought they should. And you know, this is life in general, though, isn't it, for all of us?
I think so. I figure that there's going to be some, let's call it suffering, either way, whether you follow your calls in life or whether you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I just figure you might as well suffer in the service of your passions and your joys and die doing what you love rather than what you don't.
Yes.
But there really is suffering either way, and there's a very particular quality of suffering that attends people who refuse to be themselves, if you can put it that way, to follow their deepest enthusiasms and joys and passions and fascinations and do the work they perhaps were put here to do, to offer the gifts that they have. There's a particular kind of suffering which is about feeling profoundly out of whack with yourself throughout the course of your life. And it shows up as things like envy at other people's successes and a certain quality of grinding anger. And sometimes depression, which I've heard described as anger turned against the self.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the Willie Loman syndrome, isn't it, from
right.
Death of a Salesman, you know,
the
person that never made it in the way they wanted to and
exactly.
You know, ends up alienated from themselves and their family and their business and everything that they did. And it's an indictment against the American system, I guess, you know, of success. But, you know, I think there's a quantum difference, I think, isn't there, between that kind of ennui, that kind of sadness and depression, and the struggles that you have when you're following your calling. You know, I've had many struggles in my, you know, 30-year career as a minister at my church here, because I've been here for the whole time of it. But the other side of it would be, you know, I've loved every minute of it, you know, even though it's been very, very difficult at times. You know, I wouldn't swap it for anything, and I think that's the sort of hallmark of following your bliss, that yeah, sure, it's not going to be plain sailing, but that's not the point. You know, you're not guaranteed anything in life, but I think you do get value and joy from what you choose to follow,
right? And I think also how we use the suffering and the challenges and how we respond to them is critical. I remember years ago I was told that I needed to learn how to suffer creatively and not just neurotically.
That's a good one.
Which I think what she was getting at the time was that you need to plow it in and use it. If you're having a hard go, write about it. Or draw pictures of it, or create theater pieces of it, or use it as the kickoff for juicy conversations with people, but suffering creatively, not just neurotically. It was one of those things that every once in a while somebody will say something to you in the course of your life that changes the course of your life, And that was one of them.
Right. That's a good one.
I realized that, yeah, the suffering that's going to come from whatever, however I choose to live, if I can really use it as grist for the mill, nothing is wasted.
You know, there was a professor at Unity Village when I was in school. He was quite well known. He was a kind of an irascible man, but he was very deep and had wonderful insights. And he said there were two kinds of suffering, which kind of goes along with what you're saying. He said, you know, there's suffering, and then there's useless, unnecessary suffering. Mm. And so often we buy into the useless, unnecessary suffering because we tell a story about our suffering, you know, and then it becomes an entity that blocks us. But if we can stay creative with our suffering and let it inspire compassion, you know, for ourselves and others, then I think it frees us. So, you know, it's that useless, unnecessary suffering that gets in the way. Folks, I'm with Greg Lavoie. We're at the first break here. We're going to listen to these messages from Unity, and then we'll come back and talk more about what it means to live an authentic life. I love that word, authentic. Let's talk about that when we come back.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives. Kintsugi is an ancient Japanese art form of fusing broken pottery pieces together by filling the cracks with gold. The resulting piece is not only restored and visually stunning, it also takes on a new life. Whatever has happened in the past, however broken we may feel, we can be whole again by filling our lives with the transformative power of God. Our experiences make us unique. The presence of God makes us whole. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, "Be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God. What is good and acceptable and perfect." Remember, with God, all things are possible.
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. Finding time for the positive reminders in Daily Word is easy with the digital edition, perfect for smartphones and readers on the go. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial to the online magazine, plus a daily email with the word for the day and the Daily Word app. To sign up for a free 30-day trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Greg Lavoie, the author of the bestsellers Callings and Vital Signs, and we're talking about what it means to follow a calling and to live that authentic life. And I want to talk about that word authentic. We use it quite a bit in spiritual circles, but people have many different ideas about what it means to be authentic. So, Greg, when we use the word authentic, what comes to your mind first of all?
Well, I think what it comes to my mind is to live by my own code of ethics, to live a life that truly belongs to me and isn't a knockoff. This isn't just even about vocation. These are kind of decisions that I make on an almost daily basis. Is what is right for me? What is true for me? To ask that question, as well as to ask the question, where am I willing to be led? You know, it's kind of a path between those two questions: what's right for me, and where am I willing to be led? But they're decisions that grow out of my own sense of values, my own sense of fascination, what feels true to me in any given moment, any given conversation or relationship or encounter. And so it's something that's not a once and for all. I've made a decision, now I am living an authentic life. It's a constant call and response.
Right. Yes. Very good. You know, we did White Stone Sunday, as I mentioned earlier, this past Sunday, where we hand out a white stone to the congregation. They put a name on it that comes from a reference in Revelation. And you get a stone, you write a new name. Your new name will be put on the stone, which is your specific name for the year, kind of thing. And we were sharing it afterwards at the fellowship hall, and I shared my word for the year, and it was honest. And one of the congregants said, "What? Are you a dishonest person? You're going to have to be honest now."
And I said, "Boy,
not quite." And, you know, I wasn't going there with it, but it's around integrity again and authenticity. Right. I think, you know, the attempt to be honest in any particular situation and not go into the story or into the knee-jerk reaction, you know, which I think is inauthentic, because then you're going back into some idea you have about something rather than, you know, appreciating the direct perception of it. And I think for me that's authentic, is being present, you know, to whatever's going on, whether it's pleasurable or painful, it doesn't matter. If you're present to it, if you're real with it, like you said, true to it, then there's a freedom that comes from that. And for me, that's being honest, and that's being authentic, right?
Right. And in a sense, it's a continuous following of calls, because calls, I mean, these are not, and I don't mean it to be this way, these are not the burning bushes. I mean, when people hear the term calling, they're thinking of, you know, the bony finger of God that comes through the clouds and points to them. And, you know, and people certainly do get calls that way. But I think the more useful way to approach it is, like, these are the fire drills for the bigger ones, all the little calls that are right at your feet all the time. You know, what book to pick up on the shelf at the bookstore, what to say in a particular moment to somebody. You know, to turn left or right at the intersection. There's so many opportunities to practice it at that level. So following intuitions, listening and honoring dreams, having a conversation with your body symptoms, these are all callings. I ran across an author by the name of Ann Tyler. She wrote a book called The Accidental Tourist. Might have remembered, was turned into a movie with William Hurt. And she's a brilliant, brilliant observer of relationships between partners. And she said, "I can always tell what my husband is really thinking by the tunes that he absentmindedly hums in the car." And, you know, so "I'm in the mood for love" is really different than "tied to the whipping post." And that is a call to me. When I read that, I recognized that as one of those little calls, is the song lyrics you can't get out of your head for weeks.
Right.
Just pay attention, to be mindful of all the little calls that come in the course of a day. That's really the practice for the larger ones.
Right. Yeah, because I think that's a good point. You know, sometimes we're waiting again and maybe waiting too long for the call, you know, for the like you say, the voice of God to thunder at us. This is right. What I want you to do. And it may never come, but we do, every moment is the opportunity to respond in a creative way, right? To be called to that particular response or activity. And I think right. that's beautiful, because in truth, life is made up of tiny, tiny moments. You know, it's the details that are often the most profound. You know, there's a new movie out by Martin Scorsese called Silence. It's based on Suzuki Endo's novel, and in fact I had some professors who had written a book about the novel and a little while back, and Martin had written the postscript for that book. But the why I bring it up today is because, you know, they've been called, they're Jesuit priests, they've been called to be priests, and then they were called to go to Japan to proselytize. But it was a time in Japan when they had enough of the priests, and they'd made Catholicism illegal there, and they were torturing and killing priests and followers of Christianity. So it's a very intense, typical Martin Scorsese kind of theme. But the interesting thing is, you know, at one point they are called to step on an image of Jesus, to apostatize. If they apostatize, they save thousands of lives. If they refuse to apostatize, everybody is crucified and tortured to death. And so there's a choice moment in the book where one of the fathers decides to step on Jesus, you know. And so in so doing, you know, he's done the worst possible thing he could to his own faith, because, you know, you're supposed to lift up Jesus no matter what. But he's also done the most compassionate thing that he's ever done in his life, and that saved lives. So you know, that's an interesting calling, isn't it? The calling beyond the calling, you know, the higher moment where you thought you'd been called to a certain way, but something higher has come, and you have to contradict what you've been following. I think that's quite a profound moment.
Oh boy. Do you recommend the movie?
I have not seen the movie yet. It just came out, but I love the book. It's a short book, but it's very intense. And I hear the movie captures the you know, the feeling of the book quite well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's intense. I mean, you're going to have to be in a certain mood to partake of that. But fascinating.
A beautiful example. We are sometimes called to make hard decisions, and they're all calls. I mean, people tend to focus on the vocational aspect of calls, as in careers and whatnot. But the origin of the word vocation, vocare, just means to call. It doesn't refer to vocation as we know it. And so if you kind of widen your lens a bit and realize that all kinds of things in day-to-day living on Mulberry Street life are actually callings, you set up a kind of a call and response relationship in your life where everything, in a sense, becomes call and response. Here's an example. What I would carve in my white stone right now is compassion, because I'm constantly trying to teach myself how to practice that and not just have a high opinion of myself. And I'm bicycling down a path near my house, and somebody pulls into a crosswalk that intersects the bike path and stops there. And I'm coming down a steep hill. I'm going fast. I hate having my momentum compromised, and he won't move. And I'm coming down faster and faster, and I hear myself say in the back of my head, "Come on, you idiot, move." I slam on my brakes. I have to swerve around him, and 10 seconds later, I catch myself judging a complete stranger. And I thought, there it is. There was an opportunity to practice compassion, and I almost missed it. I didn't quite. I mean, who knows what was going on there? He may have been buckling his 5-year-old into her car seat. He may have been talking to his wife who's in the hospital with breast cancer.
Right.
You know, or even just spacing out and being an idiot. But either way, it was an opportunity to practice the call toward compassion. And if I can catch that on a regular basis, I mean, that's a project all by itself, because life is constantly offering me opportunities to deal with, I'm going to put this in big quotes, idiots, as if I myself never commit such crimes.
Yeah, there we go.
But there's the call. If the call is to practice compassion, the question becomes, in how many ways can I practice the call? I had a woman I did a phone consultation with recently. She said she was called to quit her life in Knoxville, Tennessee, and move to L.A. to become an actress. And during the phone call, it became apparent that the call wasn't actually to be an actress. The call was to live more expressively, and her brain just constellated that as the epitome of an expressive life as being an actress, therefore I need to be an actress. Mm-hmm. But it's a whole different equation when you say, in how many ways can I be more expressive in my life? Then you've got opportunities every day rather than turning your life upside down to try to become an actress out in Los Angeles. But there's something about that question that really opens it, the equation up, is in how many ways can I practice the call? And all callings ultimately are being calls. They're really all being calls, to be more expressive, to be more compassionate, to be more honest, to be more of myself. And when you open it up and ask the brainstorming question of in how many ways can I, then you're really living it.
Right, a good point. And, you know, in Unity, many of the Unity teachers have talked about this, you know, what's beyond what's being presented, what's at the back of. That was a favorite phrase of Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity. You know, what's at the back of this? So, in other words, there's a metaphysical meaning of beingness, like you're saying, beyond the doing of the physical. And to just think that it's all about, oh, I think I should go to Hollywood. Maybe you missed the point of, you know, the true calling, which is, like you say, to be, in this case, more expressive. Right. Emmett Fox called it the mental equivalent. You know, there's something beyond what you think is happening in the outer that is rich, actually. When we discover there's a metaphysical interpretation of the Bible, all the stories make sense for the first time, because whereas they seemed kind of chaotic before, what's going on? When you understand them as ways of being, ways of understanding how to live life authentically, then they become, you know, very fascinating. By the way, it's always good to add three little words on the end of any sentence, you know, and those three little words are just like me. So that guy's an idiot, just like me. That guy's a beautiful child of God, just like me.
So that guy's an idiot, just like me.
It works whichever way you want to approach it.
That's funny.
Well, I've always found that works quite well.
That's a tough one. That's a little add-on. That's a tough one.
Yeah, we're all.
I remember,
in this,
you know,
together.
I grew up. I grew up Jewish, and we celebrated Passover every year. And every year, we reenacted the whole story of the departure from Egypt and the wandering in the desert for 40 years. And it wasn't until I left home, and I moved out for a period of time to San Francisco, and I did my first Reform Passover celebration, that the woman who was running it said to everybody who was sitting around the table, let's go around the circle and everybody just for a minute say some way that you would like to be liberated from bondage in your own life. And suddenly, Passover meant a whole new thing to me. It was relevant in a way my family had never made it relevant to my life.
Right.
And I just found that just a game changer for me.
I mean, it is, isn't it? It's when you realize, wow, all this is particularly relevant to my life, and that's why I love metaphysics and, you know, metaphysical interpretation of not just the Bible but of anything, because you get to see, oh yeah, this is not some dry as dust history story, you know, that has no relevance. It's actually the dynamism of my own life, you know, of how things unfold, and then it becomes, wow, endlessly fascinating, you know. And I think if we could see our lives like that, I tend to talk about adventures, you know. Whenever I have to do something that I don't particularly want to do, I say, oh, I'm going going on an adventure. And the moment that I say I'm going on an adventure, it becomes a fascinating thing. Instead of me resisting it, it's like, oh, there's something good in this, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's just reframing it in your mind, right, so that you see it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
So it becomes a calling, if you like. Instead of a chore, I'm called now. It's, I'm going on an adventure. And,
right.
You know, things show up because God's profligate joy and power is everywhere present. So
yeah.
if I'm decreeing it's an adventure, then by golly, it's going to show up as such, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, that's a wonderful word. It turns out that adventure comes from a word that means something about to happen.
Yes.
As in Advent.
That's right. Celebrating the same origin.
Yeah. The coming birth of Christ. And so, you know, one of the questions I like to entertain is what... in other words, living, let's say, a passionate life is related to a sense of anticipation, a sense of something about to happen. And one of the questions I like to entertain is, what activities in my life, what involvements give me the experience of excited anticipation? So like when they come up on my calendar, they always give me the experience of excitement and anticipation and adventure, as you put it. And those are activities that are really worth looking at. In a sense, they're calls, whether they are, going to a dance class at the end of the week or going on a road trip or taking my camera out for a weekend and picking a theme or the company of a certain friend, that sort of thing. So just to look at my life is what gives me the experience of literally adventure?
Yes. And the interesting thing about that is that you don't really need the thing itself as once you've generated the feeling. You know, you can transfer the feeling to something else once you get in that mood. Like even if it's food, I get excited about a cake or a nice meal. That's fine, but you let the food generate the good feeling, but then enjoy the good feeling. You know, you can use that good feeling in any direction then once you've generated it within your being. So it doesn't have to stay with the food. And I think that's a nice little trick too, because it's the feeling is more important than, what inspires the feeling. Because that's what we're trying to get to. We're trying to get to a more expansive viewpoint and whatever does it for us. You know, people laugh when I tell them, think about, chocolate cake or something, because they associate that with getting fat or whatever. But it's not the cake so much as the feeling of excitement and joy that people have towards these things, So
exactly.
Utilize that raw material.
That's great. It reminds me of the word enthusiasm and I love, there's a word, I love the origin of that. Entheos means the God within.
Right, exactly.
That's the definition of the word enthusiasm, the God within. So what do you feel enthusiasm about? Whatever that is, that is God speaking through us. And by acting on whatever our deepest enthusiasms are, we are by definition honoring God and articulating or expressing, affirming God. And that's following calls. That's following that deep inbred sense of joy and enthusiasm that we come into the game with.
Well, it's the same with the word amateur, isn't it? To be an amateur is sometimes looked down upon, but the true meaning of the word amateur is to do it with love. You know, when you're a professional, you do it because you have to do it. But to do it as an amateur, you love to do that. So it's got that enthusiasm aspect to it.
Amateur, as in like amore?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it comes from the root to love. Yeah, to love what one does.
Now, if you could be an expert or a professional and still keep your amateurish enthusiasm, then you've really got game on.
Exactly. There we go. to marry those two together, I think, is the key, isn't it? You know, it's like beginner's mind, that they talk about in Zen. You know, you can have a vast knowledge of something, but you maintain that beginner's curiosity, that childlike enthusiasm that Jesus talked about too, become as little children. So it's blending those two seeming dichotomous things together, I think, that provides success in life,
Yeah, and I know that people who study this stuff have discovered that The people who tend to flourish the most over the course of their lives tend to score really high in novelty seeking, which is really part of beginner's mind.
Right.
So the willingness to always see with new eyes and to try new things and to step little steps out of the comfort zone is a big part of living that kind of flourishing life.
You know, when I was a kid, we drank a lot of tea, you know, from Great Britain, and there was a phrase, I guess, I thought it was my grandmother's phrase, but I think it was a common phrase, let's have a cup of tea and a bit of fun. And I always loved that, you know, because it was like an invitation to the adventure again, you know, a cup of tea and a bit, well, we're going to have a bit of fun. We may not be well off, we can't afford all this wonderful food and everything, but we're going to have a bit of fun, you know, and everything's better with a cup of tea. It's like Americans with their coffee, you know, you feel better. But I just loved that phrase, and actually it's quoted in one of Led Zeppelin's songs. They say, let's go home and have a cup of tea and a bit and some fun.
Is that right?
And so, which is cool, but I love that idea, you know, because you can create a calling to joy and a meaning, you know, in anything. It's just a willingness to do that, a willingness to see life in that way.
Right. And you know, just for what it's worth, I'm inclined to say that authenticity doesn't necessarily mean fun. You know, it's wonderful when it does.
Yes.
But, I guess I just want to. There's a part of me that wants to encourage people to get away from the notion that following a calling means bliss, which seems to be fairly deeply ingrained in people.
Right.
And authenticity sometimes calls us into very, very difficult situations, and that's every bit as authentic as joy and days of wine and roses.
Yeah, an excellent point, because, you know, I don't mean to imply that we all have to have fun, you know,
and
ski down the mountain laughing like a hyena or whatever. you know, it's not just about that, is it? It's And I hate planned fun. You know, I think there's something awful about that. You know, where you're supposed to go on this great vacation and everything's provided for you and it's going to be bliss, you know, beyond bliss. And of course, the planned fun never really works out that way because it's, you know, the best kind of living is spontaneously, right? It can't be planned. Actually, we talk about this a lot in church that, you know, some of the greatest breakthrough moments happen when we're in the most devastating disease or difficulty in our lives, you know, that it can come through because our egos are pushed to the wall. Our egos explode. They can't handle it anymore. And something more real must come forth. So, you know, it can happen in the most difficult of times.
Absolutely. In fact, I would venture to guess if you were to ask most people where the most growthful parts of their lives happen, most people might probably point to the most difficult situations.
Yes.
Not the times when they were out in the sunshine playing Frisbee, but the times when they were pushed to the wall.
Yes, absolutely.
And so that's important to remember, that there's a correspondence, an intimate correspondence between suffering and growth.
And I think one of the biggest blocks on the spiritual path is not sin, you know, as many denominations would have it, as much as it's complacency. You know, we're stuck in a false sense of well-being or whatever, or numbness. We're complacent, and sometimes we need something to break us through, open from that, and often the only thing that'll do it is a devastation, you know.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's too bad that that's the way it often comes, but we are, you know, we are so numbed and complacent that we need something dramatic sometimes.
Right, yeah. The most dramatic example I've heard of that, I interviewed a guy years and years ago when I worked at the paper. His name was Augustin de la Peña, and he wrote a book called The Psychobiology of Cancer. And his theory is that often what cancer is an antidote to that numbness, that if we are not creating novelty in our lives, our bodies will take matters into its own hand and create novelty at the cellular level.
Interesting.
So that was a fascinating, disconcerting hypothesis.
Yeah,
but I think
there's some truth to it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so I'm not going to have a cup of tea and a bit of fun anymore. I'm going to have a cup of tea and a bit of terror. I think I'll add some terror to my life so that I can break open. Because Greg LaVoy told me to.
Sometimes, too, it isn't even life that, you know, does the old 2x4 approach to consciousness raising. Sometimes we can choose to come out of the state of numbness and disaffection on our own. We can actually choose to do it. Like, in about 10 days, I'm going on a vision quest. You've heard of the concept?
Sure.
Vision quest. I'm going out with a group to Death Valley for 12 days because I'm feeling the need for some growth, and I can't quite put my finger on it, but I know that I need to pull away from just everyday status quo, prevailing zeitgeist, and pull myself out to the desert, where, of course, there's a great long tradition of spiritual growth. And figure out what it is that I'm feeling wants to happen. So there's some deep restlessness that I'm feeling. So sometimes I will provoke growth by taking myself on a journey like that, where I'm pulled away from everything that's familiar, and I get to have some deeper conversations and figure out what, you know, the point is it's a vision quest. So it's a callings journey. And that's another way to do it.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think the work that's done by a number of people on Vision Quest is very profound, and can be very helpful. Of course, you know, it's a Native American tradition originally, isn't it? But now it's become co-opted by a lot of people, and
right.
I've known a lot of people actually that have had deep spiritual openings, you know, through Vision Quest. Again, we're cutting ourselves off from our usual routine, whether that be numbing or just ordinary, and we're trying to put ourselves in an extraordinary situation,
exactly.
and we're testing ourselves a little bit, aren't we? We're pushing the limits of what's possible, what's comfortable
Absolutely.
For us,
yeah.
and that can often be a very salutary thing to do.
Right, and we're also, I guess, in a sense, following the model of people like Jesus or people like Buddha who took themselves out into the desert to have it out. With, you know, some of the forces of that push our authenticity down, that challenge our challenge us and our values, you know, it's like the Buddhists call it taking tea with the demons.
Yes, exactly.
Take tea with the demons, and there's a good, long, powerful tradition of taking ourselves out to the desert to really find out what our deepest sense of call is and what we need to do with our lives and what gifts we need to bring back to the tribe.
Absolutely, because you come back from the Vision Quest, hopefully with new insight, you know, a new ability to integrate that into the world, to be, as you say, more compassionate. But there's tea, okay, tea again. See, tea keeps showing up. You know, you're referring to Milarepa, too, because he was up in the mountains turning green because all he ate was nettle soup. And then the demons would come and frighten him to death. And until one day he realized there's a higher strategy here. And instead of being frightened by the demons, he said, "Welcome, friends." And they were so freaked out by that they said, "Okay, you don't need us anymore." You know,
you
dissolved into us. And that's the tea with the demons. It's welcoming them into our lives rather than fearing them and pushing them away.
Exactly. And that's an acquired taste. I mean, I get it.
You
know, to open up, but here's the beauty of the notion of demons. The origin of demons were daimons, D-A-I-M-O-N. It's a Greek word, and it means guardian spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So the demons, this is what the history of the word tells us, is that daimons were turned into demons primarily by Christianity that repressed a lot of those nativist ideas. And also the idea that we were in charge of our own lives and we had our own guardian spirits rather than giving it up to, you know, the church fathers, as it
were. One big patriarchal God, you know.
Right, exactly. The alpha male.
Mediators, yeah.
Right. And so daimons became demons, and that's what happens when you suppress the daemonic energy, the guardian spirit. The genius in each one of us, when you repress it, it turns demonic.
Yes.
But the beauty of, it's like your story of Milarepa is when he opens up to the demonic, they in a sense evaporate.
Yeah.
And I think
I love
that's
it.
important realization for people is the demons actually have messages for us.
So what we're hearing today, folks, is that everything is, as Greg said earlier, grist for the mill, and this is a wonderful opportunity. I wish we could talk more, but we're out of time. I'm sure we could talk for at least a couple more hours on these fascinating subjects, but I hope we've dropped in a few things that have been useful for you. Let me tell you about next week, and then I want to say our goodbyes to Greg. Next week, Sam Bennett joins me. She's the creator of the Organized Artist Company and the author of both Get It Done and Start Right Where You Are, how making little changes can make big differences. So sort of piggybacking on this idea of following our calling here. So we'll talk to her next week. And right now I want to thank profusely Greg Lavoie for being with me. It was a wonderful show.
Great. Thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being on with us. And thanks for listening, folks, and welcome to 2017. I hope it's going to be a great year for you. I affirm it will be, and even better than 2016, though that might not take too much difficulty in providing that. But we have a field of opportunity and openness to us, so we claim it. We're on a great, grand adventure. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
When you entered first grade, did you find it hard to believe you'd ever be able to learn and do all that was expected of you? Do you remember how, through your own consistent effort and the support of your parents and teachers, you did learn the basics and went on to master more complex skills? Life is a process similar to the one we experience in school. As we move through life and attempt to expand our awareness of who we are and what life is all about, we encounter new problems, such as the schoolroom of daily living. We can approach each situation with a positive attitude, take one step at a time, and know it's only a matter of persistence before we arrive at a solution. Repeated efforts will accomplish any undertaking. This law of life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
What if you were intentional about your life, committed to having more energy and being more vibrant? Join Reverend Temple Hayes, spiritual leader of First Unity at Unity Campus in St. Petersburg, Florida, as she guides you on a journey to an intentional and energetic life. Empower your life and fully express the wondrous energy, love, and joy you hold in your wildest imagining. Joyfully and actively know that more important than what happens after you die is the deeper and enriching concern for what happens while you're living. How can you experience an incredible life right now? Learn how each week on The Intentional Spirit, Seeing and Being, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Central Time, right here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.